Thank you, Dan. Thank you for the invitation to be here. Thank you to each one who's chosen to be here tonight. Was glad to see the service this morning and the calling that was accepted. Grateful for my brother Cody. I'm grateful to the Lord that he's seen fit to call good, honorable men to the ministry. He's also seen fit to call men like myself and Cody to the ministry. I'm proud of my brother and my cousin. I know that he has a desire to serve the Lord. I know our prayers will be with him. Tony and I had texted the day that we heard that he had been called, and we thought about to convince him to be ordained and to preach on the same day. But I think we both backed out of pushing him to that. I can't say that the sound on the streaming is very good. My kids this morning, when we were listening to the music being sung, they said, "I think I hear Uncle Bob." Sure enough, there he was. I digress. But one of the things that I enjoy and that I appreciate most about the gospel, about the fullness of the gospel, about the story of Jesus, about the plan of salvation, about all of it really is the simplicity of it. And, you know, with thinking as a young person, thinking maybe my kids are listening to me and hearing that the gospel and the story of Jesus Christ and salvation and hearing that described as simple, they might not agree with that. I remember being young. I remember being overwhelmed with names and locations and new vocabulary that you find in the gospel. Melchizedek, Abinadi, Noah in the Bible, Noah in the Book of Mormon, Capernaum, Laodicea, lasciviousness, Ephraim and Manasseh, on and on. All these names and locations. And I would find myself at times in one of the adult Sunday school classes, and there would be my dad, there would be Amy Schrader, various Seibel family members, and the elder Harvey would be there. And I would guarantee that in every one of those classes, Harvey could talk for 5 minutes straight, and in those 5 minutes would quote word for word no less than 8 verses from the Bible without looking them up, and just off the top of his head. And I remember thinking, wow, and being so impressed with that and thinking that I could never get to that point in my life. I still haven't gotten there, but not ever thinking when I was young that it was simple. But the more that I've read and the more I know about the scriptures and the way that the Lord works in our lives, the simplicity is something that I appreciate so much the older I get. Sometimes with, just like the knowledge that I have with my job and like you've had, you know, the jobs that you've done in your life, your careers, you take for granted how much you do know. You forget what it was like to not know what you know now. And it's good to know those names and places and have that vocabulary. It helps to inform and it helps to deepen our understanding of the scriptures, strengthen our relationship with the Lord. But for those who struggle and don't agree with that assessment of it being simple, I want to remind you it's not critical to your salvation that you have an encyclopedic knowledge of the scriptures. Because in our scriptures we find simplicity. And perhaps the most famous of all the scriptures is one of the simplest. John 3:16, it says, "For God so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Now, is there a more complete statement in the scriptures? Creator of heaven and earth, of everything that we see, he loved us so much that he gave his only Son, part of himself, to die for us. that if we would express that belief, that we would put that belief into action, we would be with him forever. It's that simple. There's a reason why this scripture has been held up so highly for so long. It's the simplicity of the gospel that I want to read from. And I want to read out of the 16th chapter of Alma. And I usually have this on, you know, for the overhead, and I won't apologize that I don't. I know that that helps to follow along. But if you're following in your own scriptures, it's on page 422. It's Alma 16, starting with verse 143. And this is a man named Alma, and he's speaking to a group of people called the Zoramites, and he is illustrating the beginning of their faith. And he is doing that in the form of an analogy, and he is comparing that faith, the beginning of it, the experiment, as he calls it, compares that to a seed. And now, as I said concerning faith, faith is not to have a perfect knowledge of things. Therefore, if ye have faith, ye hope for things which are not seen, which are true. And now, behold, I say unto you, and I would that ye should remember that God is merciful unto all who believe on his name. Therefore, he desireth in the first place, that ye should believe, yea, even on his word. And now he imparteth his word by angels unto men, yea, not only to men, but women also. Now this is not all. Little children do have words given unto them many times, which doth confound the wise and the learned. And now, my beloved brethren, as ye have desired to know of me what ye shall do, because ye are afflicted and cast out. Now I do not desire that ye should suppose that I mean to judge you only according to that which is true. For I do not mean that ye, all of you, have been compelled to be humble yourselves. For I verily believe that there are some among you which would humble themselves, let them be in whatsoever circumstances they might. Now, as I said concerning faith, that it was not a perfect knowledge, even so it is with my words. Ye cannot know of their surety at first unto perfection any more than faith is of perfect knowledge. You know this story, but I'm going to keep reading, and I want you to read on with me together. But behold, if you will awake and arouse your faculties even to an experiment upon my words and exercise a particle of faith, yea, even if you can no more than desire to believe, let this desire work in you, even until ye believe in a manner that you can give place for a portion of my words. Now we will compare the word unto a seed. Now if ye give place that a seed may be planted in your heart, behold, if it be a true seed or a good seed, if ye do not cast it out by your unbelief, that you will resist the Spirit of the Lord, behold, it will begin to swell within your breasts. And when you feel these swelling motions, you will begin to say within yourselves, it must needs be that this is a good seed, or that the word is good, for it beginneth to enlarge my soul. Yea, it beginneth to enlighten my understanding. Yea, it beginneth to be delicious to me. Now behold, would this not increase your faith? I say unto you, yea, nevertheless, it hath not grown up unto a perfect knowledge. But behold, as the seed swelleth and sprouteth and beginneth to grow, then you must needs say the seed is good. For behold, it swelleth and sprouteth and beginneth to grow. And now behold, will this not strengthen your faith? Yea, it will strengthen your faith. For ye will say, I know that this is a good seed. For behold, it sprouteth and beginneth to grow. And now, behold, are ye sure that this is a good seed? I say unto you, yea, for every seed bringeth forth unto its own likeness. Therefore, if a seed groweth, it is good. But if it groweth not, behold, it is not good. Therefore, it is cast away. And now, behold, because ye have tried the experiment and planted the seed, and it swelleth and sprouteth and beginneth to grow, you must needs know that the seed is good. And now, behold, is your knowledge perfect? Yea, your knowledge is perfect in that thing, and your faith is dormant. And this because you know, for ye know that the word hath swelled in your souls. And ye also know that it hath sprouted up, that your understanding doth begin to be enlightened, and your mind doth begin to expand. Oh, then is this not real? I say unto you, yea, because it is light. And whatsoever is light is good, because it is discernible. Therefore, you must know that it is good. And now behold, after you have tasted this life, is your knowledge perfect? Behold, I say unto you, nay. Neither must ye lay aside your faith, for ye have only exercised your faith to plant the seed, that ye might try the experiment to know if the seed was good. Most of you here, as I look at, you have performed this experience of faith, experiment of faith in your life. If you're listening home, you've performed this experiment. You've seen that seed grow. You've followed all the steps here. The seed is verified because it is light. And you feel it swelling in your soul, and you've been blessed by it. You've planted it, you've watered it, you've given it care, it's grown. My youngest daughter, three weeks ago, was baptized. And at 14, she has a witness. And I know that each of you have a witness, that seed is good. And now behold, as it beginneth to grow, ye will say, let us nourish it with great care, that it may get root, that it may grow up and bring forth fruit unto us. And now behold, if ye nourish it with much care, it will get root and grow up and bring forth fruit. Many years ago, my wife bought me this briefcase. Just a black leather briefcase. She got it for me, I think it was for Christmas. I don't remember. But it's high quality. I saw the label on it. I knew that she spent a lot of money on it. It was, and probably because it's something that I wouldn't buy for myself. She's good to me. I don't know why. I don't deserve that. But she bought me this briefcase, and I've used it ever since. I can tell you, when I was young, I used to get so frustrated with my dad. I mean, Uncle Bob can list all the reasons why I would get frustrated with my dad. But one of the reasons is he would treat his tools so terribly. He had all these tools that I would love to have, and they would just be everywhere. And they would be dirty, and they would be left outside, and there was no organization to it. And it would drive me crazy. But I'm soon to be 41, and I can tell you that turns out to be hereditary. Because I do the same thing. And I've done that with this bag. And I was looking at it recently, and I noticed that this nice bag that my wife got for me, that I had gotten dull, and it was messy, and the leather was starting to lose its softness. And, you know, it wasn't the bag's fault. The bag is as good as the day that I bought it. It's never failed me. There's never been a time where I looked at it and said, you know, you're just not pulling your weight here. You're not doing what I wanted you to do. It served its purpose exactly what it was intended to do. But the reason that it had was looking the way that it looked was I had not given it any concern. I was using it for what I wanted from it, and that was the end of my thoughts towards this bag. I had neglected this nice gift. Verse 165 again. And now behold, if ye nourish it with much care, it will get root and grow up and bring forth fruit. But if ye neglect the tree and take no thought for its nourishment, behold, it will not get any root. And when the heat of the sun cometh and scorcheth it, because it hath no root, it withereth away, and ye pluck it up and cast it out. Now this is because the seed was not good. This is not because the seed was not good, neither because the fruit thereof would not be desirable. But it is because your ground is barren, and you will not nourish the tree, therefore ye cannot have the fruit thereof. Nothing had changed about this bag that I've carried with me other than the fact that I neglected it. I hadn't cared for it. No. The weather is resilient, and I got out my weather conditioner and cleaner and buffed it, and man, that's a satisfying thing to do. You know, weather is a resilient substance. And over time, even the best, even the strongest objects, tools, relationships, even the strongest ones will begin to degrade and erode, wither away without our attention and our care, without our nourishment. Faith is no different. Verse 169, and thus it is, if you will not nourish the word, looking forward with an eye of faith to the fruit thereof, you can never pluck of the fruit of the tree of life. This is the fruit that Lehi saw. In his vision, he saw this, and he was desperate. He was desperate for his family to taste this fruit, to find their way through the midst of darkness. The panic that he felt when he saw his two sons, they wouldn't reach that fruit. This is what the Lord would have each one of us, each one of my children, each one of your children, everyone that you come in contact with every day, everyone that you see on TV and the news, this is what he would have for each one of them to receive. It says back in Lehi's vision, after he gives that vision, says how he would exhort them with all the feeling of a tender parent. He would preach to them. He prophesied to them. He bade them to keep the commandments of the Lord. He did everything that he could. Here we have in our lives special occasions that we set aside to give special attention to people in our lives. Time to celebrate them. Birthdays. We remember the day that someone was born, and we buy them gifts, and we sing them songs, and we treat them extra nice on those days. I threaten my kids like no other days on their mom's birthday. Anniversaries. We remember the day that we were married, and we think about our spouse. We say all the lovely things to them that we don't take the time to say on other days. Valentine's, on Christmas, these special times of notice where we appreciate the people in our lives. And think about the planning that goes into that. Think about all the birthdays that you've celebrated for your kids and all the gifts that you bought and all the planning that went into it with the right decorations and the gift that they would want the most, the effort that you put into it. Did that not strengthen that relationship? Do you not think about those times and remember the smiles and the hugs and the feeling that you got when you received it and the feeling that that special person felt when you gave it to them and how it deepened your relationship? At taking the time to show love and to be mindful of them, do you do that with your relationship with the Lord? And I'm not talking about the times that we come to church. That's already set up. We basically just have to show up to really be a part of that service. I'm talking about the time that you make in your own life, yourself, for the Lord. Do you take that effort? Do you see the aging? You see the stiffness that's grown in, the fading around the edges. Does it bother you? Are you used to that? Build and strengthen that connection with our God, the most important relationship that we have in this life, to prove the value that it has to you. It's been a rough year, this past year, and I was grateful that there were times that I would see reminders from people. I would get reminders in person and, you know, via the way people communicate and about self-care, about taking time to breathe, to decompress, to do the things that relieve stress in your life. Because it takes a toll. It takes a toll on us, like time takes a toll on the tools that we have. But I'm reminded that in tumultuous times, we can be susceptible to distraction, that we can become overwhelmed with the onslaught of negativity and news, and it's tiring. It wears you down, and certain times you just want to tune it out and be distracted and not think. And it's those times that I feel like we are susceptible to more distraction. We're susceptible to deception, to having our attention, to having our emotion and our passions diverted away from God to other things. I believe that we are living in a time where idols are being revealed. God is shining a light on the idols in our world. And it's up to us to see them for what they are. And we can't do that on our own, and thankfully, He's given us that Spirit to be with us, the Comforter. He'll lead us in wisdom. But we have to trust in that Spirit, and we have to not rely on our own wisdom and those that we've decided to trust implicitly in this life. As a parent, I can tell you, my children should not trust me implicitly. They should not. And I don't know of a man who would stand here and tell you that you should trust him implicitly. Our trust belongs to God, and God alone. Not our own opinions, not our own biases, not our own prejudices. I believe that in these times of distress and turmoil, that God gives us an opportunity to set ourselves apart. And I don't mean to remove ourselves completely from the world, because I believe that God wants us to act in the world. There's a reason that Cody was called, and it wasn't just to preach to the same people that are here today. We have a calling to all the world. Isn't that what he said to his disciples before he left them? Go ye into all the world, preach the gospel. To let the light of Jesus Christ be what defines us. That is what makes us different. That is what sets us apart. 2 Corinthians. There's a reminder to me of how to keep myself separate. 2 Corinthians 6, the 14th verse. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. He doesn't tell us to have that fellowship if the ends justify the means. He doesn't say that. What communion hath light with darkness? If we are the children of light, if we are the children of Jesus Christ, living after his example on this earth, the ones that people are supposed to look to, we can't have that. Can't make those justifications. Matthew, the 5th chapter, 13th verse. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, Wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. There's too much anger in this world. There's too much anger in this world. We're to be different. We're not supposed to take part in those things that push us to anger, that fuel that in our lives. We need to separate ourselves from them, to be an example. This is an opportunity for us. And it's scary to me. It's scary because I don't know what next month brings. I don't know what is going to happen by the end of the year. I don't know when I can stop wearing this mask. I don't know. I don't know when it'll feel like things are getting back to normal. I don't know when that is, but I know that I have a work to do in the meantime. I can't just press pause. Can't wait for anyone else to do it. I want to read out of Ephesians, also in the 5th chapter. Starting with the first verse. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not once be named among you, as becometh saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Speak up when you see them. Call them out when you see them. Identify them. It doesn't matter who is doing them. We have a responsibility to call the works of darkness out. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. We need to nourish and nurture that tree that's growing in our lives. We need to push out the distractions in our lives. We need to be forceful against them. We should not be passive with them. We need discernment. We need to seek discernment from the Spirit. It would help us to identify those things in our lives that have become idols. The excuses that we've made for those that we might have trusted. It's because we have a work to do for the Lord. And it will take our focus, it will take our attention and our care. I'm going to read my last three verses out of Alma, as he's speaking to the Zoramites. This is my prayer for us. This is my prayer for my children, for this church, for all those who are seeking God and putting their faith and trust in God alone. But if you will nourish the word, yea, nourish the tree as it beginneth to grow, by your faith with great diligence and with patience, looking forward to the fruit thereof, it shall take root. And behold, it shall be a tree springing up unto everlasting life. And because of your diligence and your faith and your patience with the word in nourishing it, then it may take root in you. Behold, by and by ye shall pluck the fruit thereof, which is most precious, which is sweet above all that is sweet, which is white above all that is white, yea, and pure above all that is pure. And ye shall feast upon this fruit even until ye are filled, that ye hunger not, neither shall ye thirst. Then, my brethren, ye shall reap the rewards of your faith and your diligence and patience and long-suffering, waiting for the tree to bring forth fruit unto you. I hope that I've given you something to think about. I hope that you will take the time to look at yourselves, to look at the briefcase of your soul, and see what needs to be polished and what work needs to be done. Thank you.